You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on Sirius XM FC Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, of course. Next to me, who else? Who else, Dave?
Who else?
Yeah, who else would it be?
Why would you ask me?
I don't know, because you're the one sitting there, Dave Goss, and then in the Octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
If you could co-host this show with anyone in the world, right? Let's say the large world of Major League Soccer.
Of Major League Soccer.
So, like we can add U.S. soccer to that. Okay. Like, I think David Beckham could
go. I'm looking around the Star Wars cantina. Who am I going to buy a drink? Who's going to sit down next to me for this? I mean, Greedo is the obvious choice until I have to waste him. You didn't get that reference? No. Just over here just giving me the blank stare.
I don't know.
This is why you're my co-host.
I don't know how we ended up on Star Wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just because it's a great image. I'm going to give that to Ariel Castillo. She's the one that put that image in my mind at All-Star, the Star Wars cantina, as equation for like MLS and MLS media.
Yeah. Breck Shea, whatever.
I mean, look, Simon Borg is a clear...
Right.
You know, he's on the wish list. We beg and we borrow and we steal.
Simon
and we
is the most interesting person in U.S. soccer in any level.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's a good call, actually, I think. I'd love to have Nick Fershaw back. I still miss him a ton. Nick, shout out,
man. So you picked two dream people who you've already
But those aren't the
with.
Ones. Wow. I'm going to say Kurt Larson, because I think Kurt Larson would just – he would take the opinion on this show.
Take being the operative word.
Mm-hmm. He would take it to a whole new level. So he would, I mean, he's like in that realm, but, you know, I think we could find some former
players. I hope
players.
This filters through to him that Andrew Reeby's dream.
Don't blow
co-host.
Up his ego like that. Look, I was under pressure. This is blow like Wando and 10 goals.
The man has carried Toronto soccer community for a year or two now.
Well, I'm going to tell you mine.
Yeah, go.
Hercules Gomez.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for him. No offense, Eric, but I can't wait for him to retire because he's gonna spit hot fire about everyone and everything. And I thought he was great in the studio for Copa America this summer as well.
Yeah,
so I think Herc has a big future.
You take the shackles off, give him 50 minutes. Who are you going with?
Giovanni Dos Santos, because we'd set a record. We'd do the first ever audio-only emoji conversation.
Yeah. A whole lot of Pokemon Go probably being played.
Me and GDS
that.
Would be playing some serious Pokemon Go. Volpex here and there.
Hey, I would love to hear your opinion out there, listeners. Who do you want us to?
Who do you want to replace us?
Yeah, that's
Hope Solo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that one too. We got some potential here. We got some good stuff. We may be out of a job, but hey, you know, as long as the product is good, let's talk about the actual show here for just one second. We have Nelson Rodriguez coming up. He's going to sit down with us here in the broom closet.
Potential future.
Yeah, he could be.
ETR host.
Yeah, smart guy. Got a lot of experience. He's going to sit down with us, talk about what's going on in Chicago, what went down with the Bedoya deal, and what's up with that terrible road streak they have. I believe that he was the general manager of Chivas USA when Chivas won a road game. And the Fire have since not won a road game since that time. So it's not a very good streak for them.
The U.S. Open Cup coming up this week.
Semifinals, Tuesday and Wednesday.
On the road.
Yep, Tuesday. Yeah, it's tough. Tuesday, New England and Chicago. And on Wednesday, L.A. and FC Dallas. We'll talk about all that in the second segment. Let's talk about the weekend because it was an exciting one. And let's talk about the game that really got everybody going on Sunday night. That'd be a 2-2 draw out at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. The Galaxy roaring back from a 2-0 deficit against the Red Bulls, who were beset by injuries, I'm going to say. Jesse Marsh using all three subs in the first 46, 47 minutes. Damien Parnell, Connor Lade, and then BWP all getting pulled out of this game. Parnell and Lade, I think, are two real injury concerns for them. Lade looks like, at least it looked like, he may have done an MCL, PCL, something with his knee. He really could not put any weight on it. And Parnell had a really rough tackle to the ankle from Jeff Lorenowitz that he wasn't very happy about. And neither was Jesse Marsh. Marsh was even more unhappy late in the game, guys. Two PK calls he thought were missed. I agree with him. Did not get called. And he ends up getting sent off the field by Hilario Grajeda, which led to one of the best scenes in MLS this year, which is Jesse Marsh hugging Kevin Stott and then getting daps from Bruce Arena and the boys on the LA Galaxy bench. Doyle, this game was wild. It had it all. Great goals, a comeback, not a red card, but plenty of yellow cards and some controversy to boot.
Yeah, Jeff Lorenzo, it's going full Cobra Kai in this one. I thought that there were actually three missed penalty calls. I thought that there was a first half one. Was it Kamar Lawrence bringing down Steven Gerrard?
It was, I believe, and I thought that was a penalty as well.
I think, look, we hear players say all the time, the one thing, and coaches, the one thing we want is consistency. And I don't think you can argue that Hilario Grajeda was inconsistent on Sunday night. I think he was a little too permissive, but that's not what people ask for. So I understand why the Red Bulls were angry, because I thought Daniel Sterris also should have seen at least a yellow card, maybe even a red, for his tackle that injured Bradley Wright Phillips. When you lose two guys to injury on tackles and you see two late penalty shouts go unheeded, it makes sense that you're a little ticked off in the post game.
Perplexed and confused. Those were the words Jesse Marsh used. He didn't go scorched earth, which I think he's probably learned from earlier this year. You can't say certain things and expect to hold on to all your money. But there was some real frustration there.
There was, and I wonder if part of it is, look, Jesse's a smart guy. He can afford to take out another fine from the front office for whatever he wants to say. But he realizes he played his hand when it comes to ripping the refs and the calls that he feels have gone against him. And now it was a case of trying to dial it back and saying, okay, you know what, we're just going to handle this. Because, look, Alexi Lalas does a really good job of addressing this on every broadcast for FS1. Everything to a certain extent is a performance. Everything to a certain extent is trying to manipulate and get enough calls in your favor. And it's not just Jesse Marsh who does it. It's certainly Bruce Arena. It's certainly Jason Christ. It's Patrick Vieira. It's Caleb Porter. It is literally every coach in the league. So I assume that there's some sort of strategy to this from Jesse's perspective. I was surprised he didn't go thermonuclear afterwards, but you got to take the long view if you're coaching.
If you're Jesse, you don't want to end up becoming just noise. If you complain about the ref in the same way after every game, it doesn't get through.
I think that's what Peter Vermees has experienced a little bit in Sporting KC.
We still point out when Bruce says things because he doesn't say it every single time, and mm-hmm. has a tendency to say it in unique ways when he does choose to say it. But it gets pointed out and it gets looked at. And I think the other thing is there was a few fouls after the whole thing went down. Like, I think Mike Grella picked up a yellow card.
Mm-hmm,
that was a clearly blood rush. And you need to put your team in a place where they don't lose their head when this happens. Because you're professionals and it's going to happen. We all know it's going to happen. It happens in every league. It happens all the time. And you can't have your team melt down on the field. And sometimes it's great when the coach melts down because it gives them the energy and it feels like they're in a battle and they band together. And other times the players melt down with the coach.
And even still, those coach meltdowns only go so far. You know, if that becomes a habit, that doesn't do the same thing that it does on, you know, if you're doing it once, maybe twice a year. Anyway, a 2-2 draw here. They share the points. Red Bull's not happy about it. L.A., plenty happy about it, of course. They thought they deserved it, maybe even more. Ashley Cole, with the game-tying goal in the 89th minute, brought down a little bit of a scuffed clearance and lashed it home. A really nice finish from him. And who else but Mike McGee getting the second. On the Red Bull side, Gonzalo Verón, baby, came in for BWP. This is when he had to deliver. There's been so much talk about him being potentially a bust. This was a huge goal for Gonzalo Verón. Maybe it'll kickstart his 2016
bit. Before, not his replacement, but they just brought in another backup striker.
Yeah.
And
he needs this. And you saw how happy the bench was for him. You saw how happy the bench was for Sean Davis, who had a really nice goal in this one, too. His first MLS goal.
Sean Davis is an MLS legend. Ooh, he could co-host this show.
Really?
Yeah,
already?
He's the man.
Filling in for Dax McCarty, of course. Good luck, Dax. Getting back from that broken leg. He seems to be okay, but it's going to take some time to heal. The early game on Sunday was a 3-0 win for Portland. Speaking of Peter Vermees, he didn't think his team performed to a 3-0 scoreline. There were two red cards in this game. Diego Chará gets one early in the 12th minute. Then Sonny Mustavar follows that up in the 39th minute. But KC did not take advantage of being a man up. And then they paid for it. And look, Diego Valeri, we can keep talking about it, but he's an MVP candidate for a reason. He gets it done. He just gets it done, and we finally saw some magic from Darlington Nagby, Matt, which is exciting to see.
Yeah, I think Taylor Twellman nailed it on that broadcast. He wants to, you know, he says Darlington Nagby should be 10 goals, 10 assists every year, given the amount of talent that the kid has. And I don't think there are many players who could have pulled off that play to set up the Jack Jewsbury goal. It was spectacular.
He turned Benny Fauhaber into a rag doll. I mean, Benny Fauhaber is running around chasing. Yeah, he's chasing nothing at that point, basically.
Yeah, and I don't know why we don't see more of this from Darlington Nagby, but we did see it. In the last 15 minutes on Sunday, I think it was a necessary win for Portland, who only have 4 home games left and are winless on the road. So they needed to get those 3 points, especially against a Western Conference rival. And on the flip side, look, Sporting KC are paying the price for not replacing Christian Nemeth. Because if you look at the best chances they create, they fall to the wingers. Dom Dwyer does really good work, and he's going to score another 12, 15 goals this year. But he's a battering ram, and a lot of the space he occupies, that ends up with the second ball going to the wingers. And all due respect to Connor Hallisey and Jacob Peterson, who are good squad players, are these guys at the level you need if you want to compete at the top of the Western Conference? Certainly not in terms of finishing.
Speaking of finishing, Clint Dempsey, with some of the easiest finishes of his career against Orlando in that middle game on Sunday. A hat trick for Deuce. Jay Morris feeding him. And you know what? I think this was one of those performances.
This is Yogi Bear reporting live.
Oh. We don't know any bears named Yogi, but we do know a bear named Ben. Yeah, that's the bear. He's here, man. Ben the research bear in the building. Henceforth to be known as the captain because somehow he came into possession of a captain's armband and now wears it in co-ed soccer.
I mean,
so,
you know my leadership is always on point.
That's true. You are. You're leading the way. And he is here to help explain a few things for us. As I said, a big win for Seattle, 3-1 against Orlando. They really needed it because they've got to get as many points as possible, especially on the road if they want to have a chance. You figure home points, you can not count on those, but it's a better bet. The road points could be a real problem for them. Jordan Morris got it done here, but Ben, we're coming to you for one reason. We want to know if Seattle still has a chance to make the playoffs. Educate us.
Well, I put on Twitter a couple days before this game that they had a 0% chance, and great win.
Doyle-esque prediction.
Doyle-esque. Yeah. I said great win, much needed, but unfortunately for them, it was against an Eastern Conference opponent.
Yeah.
So my opinion has not changed.
Okay, still 0%.
0%.
Tell us why. What's the math behind this?
I mean, last year the sixth seed had 51 points. I think it's going to be a little bit lower this year. The teams aren't as, I don't think they're going to have as many points. I think we're looking at 47 points is a good number to target.
Okay. That's the red line, so to speak.
I'm going to put the red line there.
Delineation of the red line. 47 points. Keep that
for
in mind.
For Seattle to get to 47 points, they will need to average 1.92 points per game for the rest of the season.
They will basically need to double what they have now through 22
basically.
Games. So in 12 games, they're going to have to at least double what they've done now.
Can I be a voice of dissent here?
Sure.
If they win their next 2 games, which are at home, they will be 2 points back based on – because they have games in hand. So they will be 2 points back of what the 6th place team is currently at now.
Assuming those teams don't win
their games.
No, I mean, no. What I'm saying is that Portland are
2 games in hand.
Sure.
Portland are on 32 points from 24 games.
Right.
If Seattle wins their next 2 games, they will be on 30 points from 24
now,
games.
Now, also, San Jose sits in front of Seattle, also on 22 games played.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep in mind they also have to jump 3 teams to get there.
Okay, so you're saying they have to get 1.9 something points per game. I mean, that's a pace that I'm looking up and down in the standings
right now.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's done
that. We've seen teams go through stretches, even 12-game stretches, getting that many points, but nobody's at 1.92 points per game this season.
That's tough.
There are some bright notes.
Okay.
Luckily, they still get to play Chicago.
Oh, that's tough. We will talk to Nelson Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I'll remind
you
in
Nelson.
A little bit. Yeah.
They also have 2 games against Houston, one home, one away.
That's good news for them.
That's good news for them. A couple of bad news, though. They have 3 weeks where they have to play 2 games, which I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm assuming that's up there among, the
back
most.
Back-to-backs, not
helpful. Wednesday and then the weekend.
Okay.
And all those will involve some sort of traveling after the game on Wednesday. So, you know, to get 6 points or even to get even 4 points in those games is going to be tough.
Okay.
We'll know at the end of the month because they fit, to echo Ben's point, from August 21st to August 28th, they play versus Portland, at Houston on that Wednesday, and then at Portland on the 28th. Yeah. If Seattle win, say, 3 of the 4 games, then at the end of August, they will have better than a 0% chance. But it's a big if.
There is
that's
nothing.
That's a huge if, considering, you know, the way they've played the season. Even, I mean, they have Lodeiro, but
yeah, no, and he's changed
the game. It needs to be said, Seattle averaged over 2 points per game at the start of 2015 when they had Oba and everybody healthy. Now, is Lodeiro as impactful a player as Oba was? I mean, it's up for debate, obviously. But
also, potential
good 180 minutes so far.
A potential Roman Torres addition as well.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Could be. Look, yeah,
I mean these are all what ifs.
They are
right now. I mean, you know me. I look at the numbers, so I'm looking at the hard facts.
Boop, boop,
and
boop, boop.
Throwing that 0% in there, man, that's a tough one for Sounders fans. Will they prove Ben wrong? I mean, come in. Bring it on. Let's have some fun emails in the mailbag. I think we might even be able to like have an emergency bear call to have him come in.
I should have warned him about the dangers of making a prediction like that.
That one will stick with you. That one will stick with you. Look, a big win for the Sounders. Lodeiro, 2 assists. His first 2 assists in MLS. He was pulling the strings all night long. Really threw balls. Incredible. Sasha Kleshchen-esque, I would say. So, I'm throwing it out there. An American's the best number 10 in MLS.
Is he?
I don't know. I'm trolling
Mara
a little
Diaz
bit. I
think still playing
I think
MLS?
Yeah, he does. I think Sasha's got a holler at it, though.
Okay.
I think he's got one. And look, in this game, Brian Schmetzer said afterwards, we pulled Clint Dempsey off after, 59 minutes because he couldn't keep up with Jordan Morris. I'm sure Clint Dempsey didn't love those comments, but he did love the fact that he got fed 3 goals on a platter. So a big win for the Sounders. Moving on to Saturday night. A big win for RSL and a big one for Nick Raimondo. With 181 wins, he is now number one among MLS goalkeepers all time. He basically owns every single record in the goalkeeping book in MLS except for one. I believe that is the save record, Ben. He's 30-something away.
He's 34, I believe.
From Kevin Hartman?
Yeah, he'll get that.
Look, a little reminder for you, and maybe it's not a reminder. Maybe you're just finding out right now. Goalkeeper Week, next week, MLSsoccer.com. We've got a bunch of great content. Tune in for that one. A lot of highlight reels. You'll basically get to see every single PK Nick Raimondo saved. It's going to be pretty fun. So make sure you pay attention to that. Giovinco's a guy that not many people are saving. PKs, free kicks, run a play. Doesn't really matter at this point. He got a hat trick this weekend as well. He now has 2 hat tricks in 4 games. 7 goals and 3 assists in that time. He's got 4 hat tricks all time in MLS. The record forever is 5. So he's going to break that one. He's demolishing records at this point. A huge win for Toronto FC, 4-1 over New England. The first 2 goals for Giovinco are basically wonder goals. Is there anything left to say about this guy, Dave? I mean, like,
no, the first goal was unreal, and then the second goal was better.
The second goal
I don't know about that one.
Whoa.
Oh,
the second goal was better. I agree that Bobby Shovelworth was a step off his line on the second one, but it was a ridiculous goal. Moving at that pace. But, yeah, I don't think there is anything left to say about him. He's unbelievable. He had, like, a dry spell, and everyone freaked out. And it's like,
did.
This is an in-your-prime Champions League player right now. And he's showing that, and he's shown that in his 2 years. And now Josie's getting back and getting healthy, and Bradley's coming back, and his life becomes easier now.
Yeah.
And he's got 7 goals and 3 assists.
Yeah, the Josie thing is interesting because he's come back, and he has played the last 30, 35 minutes for, 3 or 4 straight games now, and he has been – not just a space filler. He has changed each of those games and made it easier for the guys around him.
Yep, Josie Altidore. Will they start him? It's looking like
I don't think they should.
It's like they're going to hold off. Yeah, make sure that hamstring's right and go for the late push. That would be Bruce Arena-esque from Greg Vanney. We'll see what happens with them. On the other side, New England, as I said, they are going to host a U.S. Open Cup semifinal on Tuesday. We'll talk about that in the second segment. Some other notes from the weekend that you definitely want to pay attention to. Maybe go check out some highlights. Colorado Rapids, all they do is win at home. A 2-0 victory against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Marlon Harrison, man, he just continues to get it done in the absence of Jermaine Jones and others. Marco Papa, don't need them. Need Marlon Harrison, a goal and assist in this game. A 2-0 win for the Colorado Rapids. Well done, boys. Vancouver, Giles Barnes didn't fix him, Doyle. That's kind of what you predicted. No goals, just 3 shots on goals in their last 2 games. Scoreless in their last 4 home games. It's not going the way they want in British Columbia. DC 2, Philly 2. Jim Curtin got to be pulling his hair out after this one. They give it up late again. Steve Birnbaum with the goal for DC United to share the points. No Alejandro Bedoya in this match. He is likely to make his debut in New England next weekend. Charlie Davies did debut, though. Got off the bench. Did not get a goal in this game, but we'll see if those two best friends can get it done together going forward. Montreal, a big win. This game, it looked like it had 0-0 written all over it. Mateo Mancosu with the goal. Doyle, you talked him up, and this thing was a beauty. Brought it down off the volley, I believe. Off the chest, and then
home.
The thigh, and then gets it in the corner. Yeah.
Willis maybe could have done. I don't want to ruin it. Maybe could. It was. It comes out of nowhere, which is what's impressive. What everyone always talks about, Kyle Larin. It comes out of nowhere, but it's very close to Willis's body.
It is, and this is exactly what they signed him for, to get some goals when Drogba's not around, or when maybe Drogba can't play. So a big goal for him in this match, and then a 0-0 draw in San Jose on Friday night. New York City FC and the Quakes. I watched part of this game. It was a tough game. It was a tough game for these guys. Those are our thoughts on the weekends. Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. We come back. Fire GM Nelson Rodriguez.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Sunshine through. Ever feeling somehow, somewhere you lost your way.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. We will talk to Chicago Fire GM Nelson Rodriguez in just 1 second. But first, let me run down the schedule for you. U.S. Open Cup semifinals this week. Big time. New England, Chicago, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Guess where, Dave? It's right in front of you. You don't have to guess.
Is it ESPN 2?
It's ESPN 2. Yes, it's on the worldwide leader. So make sure to watch that one. It's going to be an exciting game. A lot at stake for Chicago. If they win, they will host the final. Yeah. And the Fire need some good news right now. So that's a big, big match for them. It kind of looked like Veljko Panovic held back some players this weekend. So maybe they'll be full strength. I expect them to field as strong a team as humanly possible. The Wednesday match, LA Galaxy, FC Dallas. That one's 10 p.m. Eastern. Also, you guessed it, ESPN 2. Doyle, consult your crystal ball here. Will Bruce Arena field the first team?
I think it'll be close to the first team, but I don't think it'll be absolutely positively their first choice 11. Because it's just not how LA have been playing the Open Cup this year. And they do have depth. If you take out Gio Dos Santos and you put in Emma Boateng and Sebastian Legette on the wings, you're doing all right. So I think they have a little bit more flexibility in that sense.
And they played Sunday evening, so it may not even be the best. It may not be the most competitive team they can play.
One guy I think we will not see is Steven Gerrard. I expect that we'll see someone else in central midfield.
What about Robbie Keane? Because he took that knock. We kind of glossed over that. We didn't even talk about it. But he got hit right in the nose, and it bled a lot. It bled a lot on Sunday.
Yeah, and he wasn't effective afterwards. And I do wonder if maybe they made a mistake by bringing him back into the game. And look, Keane has, he's been productive, but it's been more opportunism than the sort of dominance that we've become accustomed to from him. And he's 36 years old. So I do think that maybe Keane is on the bench as well.
Of course, a contract year, I believe, for Robbie Keane. You heard him talking about wanting an extension. We'll see what happens with that. We'll see what happens in the Open Cup. Certainly, Nelson Rodriguez will be paying attention. I expect he'll be at Gillette Field on Tuesday. He's now sitting down with us. Always happy to have people in the office in what we're calling, I think we're calling this the broom closet right now. It's our temporary digs. Nelson Rodriguez, the general manager of Chicago Fire, sitting down with us. Nelson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. I appreciate the time.
Well, let's start with something a little bit off the field, in the stands. We'll get to the transfer window. We'll get to Open Cup semifinal. We'll get to a number of things going on with the Fire right now. But I read a column in the Chicago Tribune the other day that I thought was inspiring and something that a lot of people need to follow up on. You came out to your own fans. You stood at midfield, I believe, and said, hey, guys, we've got to stop saying this chant. And if you do, you're going to get taken out of the stadium. I think we all know what this chant is, listening to to broadcast or being at games in North America. Why now? Why was the time to stand up against this?
Well, first, you know, I think the hero of the story is our ownership group. And we are really trying to live the values of Andrew Houtman and his family through the Chicago Fire Soccer Club. And, you know, this particular chant started to make a little bit of a resurgence through Copa America. And, you know, we had heard that it was sprinkling a little bit throughout Major League Soccer as well. And it's not just this chant. It's this entire idea of organized, premeditated, profane, vulgar, obscene chants. There's just no place for it. And it's not needed. You know, as I mentioned to Mr. Cass, it's not clever. It's not creative. It's not supportive. And I certainly don't think it's reflective either of our club, whose values include, you know, inclusion, respect, honor. And I don't think it's reflective of the city of Chicago, which has great sports fans. So it seemed very natural to me to finally, and to our club as the spokesman for the club, if you will, to stand up and say, enough's enough.
A reminder to our listeners, don't cross the line is not just a slogan. It's a way that we're asking you to consider your actions in MLS stadiums, outside of MLS stadiums, basically everywhere in your life. And I think it's very commendable. What's your feedback been like so far? What have you heard from the fans? Has there been any pushback? All positive?
It's been incredibly positive and supportive. There's been quite a few folks who've reached out to me. I'm not even quite sure how they've gotten my email or my phone number to express a personal appreciation for it. And, you know, there have been very, very few fans who have actually indicated that they were offended by our position and our stance. And as I mentioned, you know, those fans were not the right club for them because we believe in respect for all. We believe it's not it is our place to be representative of our greater community. And, you know, we stick by what we said, and we'll try to live that don't cross the line and live our values.
Well, we applaud that. Let's move to the transfer window. We will talk about that U.S. Open Cup semifinal, of course, a huge game for the Fire. On Tuesday, you can watch it on ESPN2. That one's in New England. Also, we'll talk about 2016, but let's start with the window. It just closed. The big news, at least at the close of the window, was Alejandro Bedoya coming into the league. You guys own the top spot in the allocation ranking, Philly trading a number of acronyms and draft picks to you for that spot. Walk me through that from a Fire side. Was Alejandro Bedoya an active target of yours? Was this something that came up for you and you had to evaluate as it came with the assets you might get in a trade as well as the value of him and your team? How did it all go down?
Well, I think the viability of adding Alejandro really occurred during the All-Star break. And I had serious discussions with his representation. I had the good fortune of getting to know Alejandro a little bit through my short time with U.S. Soccer and through Jurgen Klinsmann's open policy of having me work with a lot of players. Alejandro's he's just a great person, first and foremost, and we put a big value on the people that we look to bring into our club. From a soccer perspective, what we really liked is his attacking game and his versatility within that attacking game. He can play wide on the right or the left. He can play centrally. He does the work on both sides of the ball. He can find the back of the net or create. So really became very intriguing to us. Now, I think we were not looking for this leading into the window. We had always intentionally planned to be quiet in this window. But I would say that we've managed our salary budget and our roster well enough that we could be nimble for just this type of opportunity. Three teams in total made offers to swap spots with us in the allocation rankings, and we process that as you process any other part of information. Ultimately, I think that Philadelphia's offer was fair and compelling. We felt we might not yet be ready for a player like Alejandro. When I took the job, I mentioned that I think DPs should finish the puzzle. I don't think our puzzle yet is complete, and so ultimately we made the decision we felt was in our best interest.
You've been around the league, of course. You came in and you had a lot of ideas of how you wanted to work. from what you've seen, was there a thought of maybe more successful bringing in big players in the summer compared to the off-season transfer windows?
If I understand the question correctly, the opposite. I think it's very hard for players coming into Major League Soccer in our summer to adjust and perform well right away. The only player that I could think bucks that trend is Drogba, but he didn't come from playing. He was off. And maybe Blanco as well had some success when he first came in. So we really think that bringing a player in January, February, March is the better path for immediate success. You know, with our own Michael Deleu, you know, we knew he was coming in early in March, and so we planned and programmed a rest and a preparation period for him. So in general, I think from our perspective, if you're adding a player at midseason, if he's coming from outside the league, we're thinking we really should expect his performances to replicate his past or improve the following season, not in that first 3 or 4 months remaining of the MLS year.
Nelson, one guy who has jumped in and made an immediate impact is in Seattle. Nicolas Ladero seems to have fit in absolutely perfectly and in a way has completed the puzzle for the Sounders. The question is less than about getting great players, because obviously everybody wants that, or even the timing. The question for the Chicago Fire is, do you guys have the financial resources to go out and get a Ladero-level player? Can you go buy a starter from a team as big and renowned as Boca Juniors?
Yeah, I think that our ownership group has demonstrated that in the past. You know, up until the recent mega contracts, if you will, the Fire's been in the top quartile of investment on players. And there's been only positive support given to me by ownership, but it's got to make sense. You know, I personally want Lodero to be successful because I think that there's still a little bit of a heavy slant towards Europe, and we forget that the other hemisphere has some pretty damn good players and teams in it. But he's also only 2 games in, and I think he'll get better as time goes on, but we'll see if he's able to sustain it for the rest of this year as well. We need to find the right person and the right fit for us, and then I have to make the arguments, appreciably so, to ownership as to why it makes sense. But we're fully aware of the direction the league is headed. You know, we've got to make sure that when we bring in a big player, whoever that may be, whether it's a young player who is on the upswing, an established player like Lodero, or, you know, a truly recognized player like Drogba and Giovinco have been, that the rest of the team is prepared to take advantage of their talents.
All right, so just for the record then, a Lodero-level player, a Giovinco-level player with the attendant salary and transfer fee is something that's not out of the range for the Chicago Fire.
It's not out of the range, but it has to make sense. You know, there is a segment of fans and a segment of media that believe, you know, just a DP or just a name or just a big expenditure is the answer. I don't believe there's any one answer. I believe putting a team together is a mosaic of a lot of different tiles. And some of that is timing and circumstance, and you've got to get on the right side of those. You know, the Lodero signing didn't just happen. There was a lot of work that Seattle put into that over an extended period of time. And while I don't have all the details, I have enough experience to know that I'm sure at times it felt like the deal wasn't going to happen. At times there was false endings, thinking it was done, only for it to continue. And sometimes those deals unravel at the end. Now, luckily for them, it all came together. We haven't spent enough time and enough resource on scouting the right pool of players for us. As I've mentioned frequently, the player matters to us as much as the person, which protracts a little bit our evaluation process. And it's also why we intended to skip this summer window, because We're trying to identify and track players over the balance of this calendar year, so we're in a position in January and February to try to make a strike if the right player is there for us.
So tell me about this mosaic, because that's where we're going to go next. You said it was you expected to be quiet, and then we saw the signings start to trickle in. We knew Delu was going to happen, but you're looking at Arkashian, and you're looking at Tiam coming in and a couple different guys. You weren't quiet. Why is that, and what are you setting yourself up for? Is it a number 10? Is that the position that you need to fill, that you need to scout?
Well, with Michael and Holly Cham, that was done early. And had we been a little bit more fortunate, we would have had Michael earlier in the season. You know, we made a transfer offer for his services in March that was rejected by the club. And we understand why. He was a very important player for them. They had just sold the services of Johan Kapelloff to us, and they didn't want to lose two of their starting 11. But if results had gone differently, he would have been released sooner, and we would have had him in May. So that was done to try to capitalize ahead of the window. With Arshakian, again, I think that one I give full credit to Pano. He's the one who found and scouted the player, and then we had some people watch him live for us and did a lot of video work. We've spoke to the player. I think that was just a product of being nimble, of having cap space, roster space, international player slots. Certainly there was unintended consequences, which ended up being benefits when we were able to move Gilberto, that opened up some other opportunities that we otherwise perhaps wouldn't have sought. So those things, I think, we took advantage of situation and circumstance. As we look to complete the puzzle, you know, for sure, we still need help along all the lines. You know, a team that's won four games can't think that its roster is
as you said, one piece away.
Is one piece away, and so we need, you know, we need to improve along the lines. Some of that improvement can come internally by players just getting better, by Pano and the staff getting better, by their having more rhythm and harmony between them. But some of it will have to come from within the league, but outside of the current Fire roster, and from outside the league. And we'll continue to look to do that. I think a major midfield presence would help this team a lot. I'm loath to say it's a 10 or an 8. They can take a lot of different forms and shapes, but we need somebody who has a clear on-field presence. And I think the locker room would still benefit by someone who has great championship pedigree behind them.
Seems like January is the time, based on all the TAM and the GAM and the things you've accumulated. You said you won't rush into it. You won't make a move that's not right. Should Fire fans sitting back, looking at this season, looking at the roster, think payoff is coming this winter?
Yes, but Fire fans should also continue to heed what I say, you know, which is we've got to get it right, not get it fast. You know, we can't just try to appease anxiety or react to desperation. I think Seattle deserves credit. You know, Seattle has been in a tough spot this year. It hasn't gone the way they wanted, but they could have gone off of Lodeiro, for example, and tried to sign some other player just to quell some anxieties that may have been building, but they stuck to their plan. I think they deserve credit. I think the great organizations, which we are trying to become, are able to do that.
Is it tough to preach patience to this fan base right now? Because I'm on Twitter. You see all the stuff coming around. They don't feel patient. They don't feel receptive to that message right now. Am I off there?
It's not tough to preach it. It's tough for them to hear it. And I understand. Look, 5 out of the last 6 years without the playoffs, and there is nothing that I'm saying that those that had the seat before me didn't also say. And so it rings hollow. It's the boy who cried wolf. And I understand that. But I also understand this is could be my one and only shot at doing this job. And so I need to do it in a way that I think is best, in a way that keeps us disciplined against our approach and our plan. I think we have good resources. I think we're building a good base. But I think if we get that player that we're hoping helps us reach another level, if we get that player wrong, then a lot of our good work will disintegrate quite frankly. Now, there's no guarantee that we get it right, but we've got to try to ensure that our process is right so that we can continue to replicate that process, because if the process is right, ultimately the results will come.
Looking ahead to the transfer window, Fire fans are also Tuesday, a massive game for the club, 8 p.m. Eastern at New England, ESPN2, a U.S. Open Cup semifinal, a tradition for this club really to be in good positions and win trophies in this competition. What's at stake here? How important is this? I'm not saying you guys are out of the playoff race, but it would take a hell of a second half or a hell of an end of the season to get into it. This could be perhaps the opportunity for silverware here.
For sure. Look, first on the MLS season, we're not conceding anything as of yet. And, you know, the East has allowed us to continue to hang around and be in it, at least at 5 or 6 spot.
Mm-hmm.
This league's a funny league. You win 2 or 3 in a row, someone else at that same time loses the same stretch, and the standings flip. But the Open Cup is very important to us, has been from the start. We prioritize this event. We've always played first choice selections throughout the tournament. So this game is not like a light switch for us that we're trying to flick on now all of a sudden that we're in the semis. We have been focused on this. We want to be the first pro club to win 5 of these. And the fact that we know we would host makes it even bigger.
Yep.
It's hard enough to play for a trophy and then to host one. And, you know, if all went well and to win one at home would just be huge and a great reward for our fans and a great testament to our ownership, to our front office, and to our team staff. So we are going full bore on this, and you know, I think a advancement on Tuesday also helps us in league play because it keeps everything alive, and so it's huge. I can't say it any other way.
We have a couple of emails from fans for this show, so I want to ask you this question. Everyone, we always talk about how can the tournament get better? How can it get bigger? Both the semifinals on ESPN2, which I think is huge for a lot of fans to be able to watch, and we saw how big it was for Philly hosting last year. But from the inside, from the outside, I mean, you've been around this competition for a while. Is there any tweaks that you'd like to see made?
It's difficult because of scheduling. But I've always been intrigued by the idea of having this tournament run in a more condensed time frame. You know,
yep.
Imagine, or at least from the field of 32, imagine that the entire tournament could run in a single calendar month. I just think that's the best way for there to build momentum.
Some
and storylines,
yeah.
You know, and so I can't say that I have the answer for U.S. soccer, otherwise I would have given it, but I'm intrigued by that idea. If we can't get there, I'm intrigued by an idea of having set locations, again, maybe round of 32, round of 16, maybe even quarterfinals that are not necessarily MLS cities, but over the course of a Wednesday, Saturday,
you've got an event.
We can take 8 teams down to 4, down to 2, and it becomes an event. And again, there are some storylines there that can happen. So those would be 2 things off the top of my head. But this trophy means a lot. It's named for one of the great sportsmen in the history of the United States, and Mr. Lamar Hunt. And we would love to add the Fire name to it for a 5th time.
We'll let you get out of here in just a second, but I have to ask you about this, Nelson. I'm looking at a date here. July 12th, 2014, I'm sure that you know that date. It's the last time the Chicago Fire won a road game. In a bizarre turn of circumstance, I believe that you were the GM or an executive at Chivas USA, which actually has a road win since then, which is very bizarre in the MLS world. How much does this weigh on your guys' head as far as road results? What do you attribute this to? Does it enter your frame of thought when the team takes a road trip?
It doesn't mine, and it doesn't Pano. I can't speak for the players. I think what enters our mind is the inability to just get the results that we desperately want, home or away. I mean, we just believe we've squandered opportunities in both places. And, you know, if we could convert one loss into a win and 2 ties into wins, you know, suddenly you've got 7 more points and everything feels different.
Right.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you know, Seattle just won on the road you know, for the first or second time.
I think there's five teams without a road win this year. It's not necessarily an isolated thing. It's just that the Fires happens to be 2 years long.
Look, we home or away, we need to learn how to win. We need to learn to score that third goal to make it 3-1 as when we were playing Red Bull at home 2 weeks ago, or lock it down and get out of a road place 1-0. We just need to learn how to win.
There you have it. Working along that line right now in the transfer market, on the field, in the Open Cup, a big game on Tuesday night for the Chicago Fire. 8 p.m. Eastern against the New England Revolution in New England. That one's on ESPN2. You can catch all the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. Nelson Rodriguez, GM of the Fire. Thank you so much, Nelson, for joining us.
Appreciate, guys, for the time. Thank you.
Big thanks to Nelson Rodriguez for sitting down with us. The best-dressed guest we've had on 100%. This show. Easily. Very sharp. From Nelson, a huge game for them on Tuesday. The news I think that Chicago Fire fans are going to get hyped about here, Doyle, is kind of the doubling down, and well done on pushing Nelson on this one, about money spent, going out and getting an impact player, going out and getting a guy like a Ladero, or, if you look back at previous iterations of the Sounders, at least like an Oba or a David Villa maybe, even Ignacio Piatti. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think there's something that the Fire have done over the past 5 years, maybe, is that they've tried to outsmart everybody with their DP moves, saying, oh, here's a guy who we see something in that maybe you don't see it, but we see it. And that's not what DP slots are for. DP slots are for the guy that literally everybody can see why they're so great. And that's Robbie Keane. That's Jovinko. That's Ladero. And hopefully for Fire fans, that's what they will have arriving in January.
As Nelson Rodriguez said, it's easy to say it. Now they got to go out and do it. We'll see if they can on Tuesday. We'll see if they can in that January window, maybe even make the playoffs. Any thoughts? Let us know. You know how to get at us when we come back. Going straight into the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Sunny day, sweeping up.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. We've got a trash can in here. I don't know if Oscar the Grouch is going to pop out of there, but David Villa might.
I didn't expect Simon to pop out of
there. Oh, I don't know if he could fit in there, but maybe Simon's a puppet. Maybe that's what we didn't realize this whole time.
I'm sure there's a million people in the comments section that would agree with that one.
Yeah, as soon as I said that, I figured that was going to be red meat for somebody in the mailbag. That's where we are now. We play that because David Villa went on Sesame Street, and it was pretty funny. I got to fess up. It's not really fessing up. I was a big Sesame Street guy back in the day. Watched a lot of it.
Yeah, I was raised on it. Absolutely.
PBS TID?
Yeah. No, I was not.
What?
I mean, I watched it, but it was not like the main staple.
Something was always off with you. Yeah. I knew it was something.
I don't possess
what did you watch?
Like sharing and stuff like that. I mean, Rugrats is the greatest television show that's ever been made.
Oh, I agree with that, but I watched, that's not a foundation for a healthy adult life.
I think I did watch Sesame Street, but it wasn't as involved in my... I watched like Arthur.
Okay, yeah.
That was a good one.
I think you were maybe just a little bit... later, like maybe Sesame Street was
still on. It was just not a go-to for the family.
Okay,
you were definitely a little bit later than me. Yeah. I had no idea what Arthur was until I saw all the memes this past week.
Wow, that was a big part.
What
of
about Clifford
well.
The Big Red Dog?
Oh yeah, I was a big fan of Clifford. I had his books.
Yeah,
who doesn't have Clifford's books?
God, by the way, you go back and read some of those books. I did it for a class in college. I read Stella Luna.
Yeah, really, really like high level education.
Yeah, for sure. Northeastern worth every penny. And some of those books have some messages that are not as okay as you think they are.
I know. You go back and look at the adult.
They're peddling some serious theories to children.
Oh man, let's talk about greatness first,
and let's talk about fantasy greatness.
MLS fantasy soccer
winner of the week, Arch Stanton with 155 points. That's
what?
Brian Corral's team.
He like that's like 100% more than I scored,
but only beat out Intelligent Change by 1 point. Andrew Kolganov at 154 points, and Spokane Shadow, third place with 150.
Spoken. By the way, do you guys know where the name Arch Stanton comes from?
I have no idea.
No, educate us.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. That's the name of the grave that the loot is buried next to. Nice. So hats off to whoever came up with that one. Well done.
Yep, well, we Worthless Knowledge FC did not finish that high this week, but we will continue on instead.
You know they're remaking Magnificent Seven, by the way.
Oh, boy, we are on some serious tangents.
Let's talk origin stories, right?
Let's do it, yeah. I mean, I threw it out there last week on Twitter. I wrote a column because I saw New York-LA coming up, and I was thinking back about this game and this fixture and why it means at least more than most to me, and it was because back in 2007 when I watched that 5-4 barn burner, you know, you remember the one. It was David. I'm on the David Villa train. David Beckham's first start for the LA Galaxy. Josie Altidore, a little bit of a coming out party for him. Of course, Juan Pablo Angel. It was a great game. It's one of those classic MLS games, and I had been paying attention to the league, but I wasn't into it. I'd gotten into soccer, or at least professional soccer, during the 06 World Cup, and that was really kind of my origin game. I watched that game. I was inspired. I thought, this is worth my time, no doubt about it. I went to my school paper. I begged them to let me write about soccer. They did. Now I'm here talking to you almost 10 years later. So it was something that...
I'd love to see some of those articles.
Yeah. Only one still exists. I looked for all of them when I was going back down this. A lot of 404 errors.
And then the one that does exist, you offered the most anodyne, banal take. We got to get more South Americans to add more imagination to the league.
It was early days.
Sign a Portuguese DP early in New England. Days.
Tommy Thompson was not a thing back then. We didn't have these, you know, we didn't have these American playmakers running around just, you know, making us all believe. But I asked for some on Twitter. We got some good stuff. A bunch of, I mean, I probably got 300 tweets off this thing. I think a lot of people unfollowed me because I just retweeted them all. Probably not my finest hour. But there were people from Europe saying, you know, late night, Sky Sports, saw this team playing. You know, I watched it for David Beckham, but this other team really inspired me. I ended up following them. Guys who, you know, liked it and then came over here and, you know, one person in particular said, and now I'm a Toronto FC fan. I don't know how they would have inspired you in the last, like 5 years ago when this happens. It was a tough time. Folks that got tickets and went to games. A lot of people from Kansas City that went to that Manchester United friendly. I don't know if you guys remember that one. That on the back of that went and bought season tickets. That was a real turnaround moment for that. And a lot in expansion cities who got a team there and went for it. Also a ton that were NASL fans from back in the day and just kind of waiting for the next big thing to come, and it
just
finally came around.
Stayed alive long enough for another week.
Held on. I'm going to throw it to you guys. What are your origin stories?
Well, let me read one here first from Craig in Columbus, and he said, you could say it starts with my mom bringing home a Crew shirt in 96, but the thing that got me permanently signed up to be a Crew SC fan was in the early 2000s, he was living in a small town an hour from Columbus when he got his first credit card in the mail. It had a $300 limit and the painting Starry Night as the background. Seconds after opening it, he immediately called Crew Stadium to buy two season tickets. Turns out he was $19 short on his limit. The ticket rep said, don't worry about it, we got you. And I've been a Crew fan ever since. The team is depressingly self-destructive this year, but they bought me with those $19.
Yeah, that's a great story. It just the smallest of gestures can really make the difference in a time like that. Dave, what for you? You were a Metro Stars guy, or you were out on Long Island?
I used to go to Long Island Rough Riders games when I was really young every once in a while. I went to Metro Stars game. I became a fan through the national team. So the qualifying cycle for the 06 World Cup was when I like fell in love with soccer through the national team, mainly through Landon Donovan because he was awesome. I still remember the 3-0 against Costa Rica at Rice-Eccles and the 2-1, I think it was, against Trinidad and Tobago to start that qualifying. Those were like the two games where I was like, this is what I'm in love with. And then I started to watch the league more and more. I didn't have many games on, so there was FSC would show a game on Saturday night.
Yes, Max Bredos. Yes!
It's in the back. Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And then you had a couple games on MSG. I'd go as much as I could. And then when they had the Thursday night national TV games, I used to have practice Thursday night. So I'd record it and go home and watch it. And it was like the best 2 hours of the week because it was like real soccer on real TV. And it was so exciting.
In the U.S., our own thing. Yeah,
very cool. So, yeah, that was all of it. And I've been a fan probably since 2005, 2006.
Doyle, were you a 96 guy? What were you?
I mean, I became aware of U.S. soccer, I guess, with the 84 Olympics, Rick Davis and Hugo Perez. And then
wait, you were forming thoughts in 84?
I was I think 7.5, almost 8 years old.
Yeah, okay. So, you're a former.
So, yeah, and you guys did not exist.
Nope. Just a twinkle in my dad's eye.
Right. And come the 90 World Cup, which I was able to watch almost all of, I realized that I was living and dying with the U.S., and I desperately wanted to see these guys play. And so from 90 onwards, I was just waiting for the day that we had a league of our own. And of course, once it happened, I was all in.
Yep. Those are our MLS origin stories. Excuse me. Look, I think a lot of people have a lot of different ways of entry into this league, but it is special to be able to share discussions and share your thoughts on this show. I think we all enjoy this. It's one of the highlights of our week. What else do you have in the mailbag? Let's get some listener thoughts here.
Well, you asked about what a Sounders successful season looks like at this point.
Yep.
So we have a few people. Trout.
Just Trout?
It's the name he signed with. He says, very simple, finish better than the Timbers. They're sitting in sixth right now. So they're the team that whole conversation in the first segment was about. I don't know how likely it is.
Yeah, because I feel like the Timbers are probably going to make the playoffs. I look at the teams out of it right now in the Western Conference, and you know the Whitecaps could make a push. They're not that far out, but they just haven't shown very much recently to suggest they're going to do it.
Yeah,
right. San Jose got the games in hand, but I wonder where the goals are going to come from. I know Wando's going to get them, but
they're in talks with a Swedish striker right now.
Yeah, who's played in Spain, a free agent. Yeah,
more than talks. It looks like he is an imminent arrival, according to various reports on both sides of the pond.
Various reports, always the most reliable. And then you got Houston at the bottom. So, look, I think they'd have to make the playoffs or at least come very, very close to pip the Timbers. And as Doyle said, there are some head-to-head matchups coming up soon. So we'll see what happens.
Speaking of movement, we have an email from Trevor Bond, DCU.
Kaelin Carr just popped his head in. Anytime somebody says the movement, it's like, you know. It's like rubbing the bottle and the genie always comes out. Yeah.
It's Trevor Bond, DC United fan since 96. Love to hear his origin story. Is it too early to ask whether those players who moved via free agency made the right or wrong moves? This was the first year that we ever had it. Aside from McGee, Moore, and he says Laurentowicz, and he says Alan Gordon, who decided to stay put, it seems like it hasn't worked out. Is this more a function of the teams that signed the free agents or the process of the free agent move? Now, I don't know how free agent move you could see it as being different than any other way that you show up on a new team. But, Doyle, do you have any feeling that there's a collective issue or non-issue?
I'm not remembering who exactly signed in.
Well, Brad Davis and Justin Mapp, I think, are the two big ones.
Right.
Yeah, Brad, those guys just haven't really been healthy. But Corey Ash went to Columbus.
Yep. Bobby Burling stayed with Colorado, which is obviously a good move for him.
And Harrington, Drew Moore. Harrington went to Chicago. Did Harrington go to Chicago?
Yeah, Harrington went to Chicago, which has been decent.
Yeah, not,
I mean, I think Drew Moore has been a phenomenal move. Mike McGee seems he's not, you know, playing huge minutes, but he's been really effective for that team.
I think Drew Moore, if you're looking around at it like right now, that one might be the one that stands out the most.
Signing.
Right. Because he's the best defender that arguably Toronto FC has ever had.
I think, I you know, it's hit and miss, as with any other acquisition method. There you're not going to find absolute slam dunks. I did expect Justin Mapp to be better because I didn't expect him to be as injured as he has been. Even so, he's not a perfect fit for what Sporting KC need. They needed a goal-scoring winger, and Mapp has never really been that. But I don't think this is something you put down to saying, oh, it's you know, the fault of free agency. It's just sometimes players don't quite fit how you expected. And we're seeing it. I mean, we could see it with DPs as well. We could see it with draft picks, obviously, homegrown players even, so on and so forth.
Last one here, Brian from Walla Walla, Washington, giving me exactly what I wanted, heat and fire. We had last week we said that someone said that the LA Galaxy should be part of Cascadia Cup because they've been so successful.
Yeah.
I expected that one
class
would have
troll
a couple,
email, yeah.
couple
yeah.
responses. Mm-hmm. He says Los Angeles has zero claim to the Cascadia Cup. The Cascadia Cup is only for teams in the land Jefferson wanted to be an independent country. During Jefferson's presidency, California was part of Mexico. Now, I did not know that had anything to do with it, but this is my favorite part of the email. If the Galaxy wants to be part of a regional competition with Seattle, Vancouver, and Portland, it has to include all the Western teams. Maybe we'll call it the Western Conference.
Maybe we
shall.
Walla Walla. What's up, Brian? Thank you for your email. We definitely appreciate it. Thank you to all of you for listening to the show, and thank you to Nelson Rodriguez for dropping by and showing us how a real man dresses. No, I'm just kidding. But good luck to the Chicago Fire going forward. A huge match for them on Tuesday night. It really, really would mean a lot, I think, to the fan base to be able to host a U.S. Open Cup final and maybe even lift the trophy. So good luck to them. Good luck to everybody else in those matches. We'll see you on Thursday. We'll wrap it up then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.